We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
2-2 from Eovaldi. Swung on and driven to the right center field gap. Mookie over there makes a sliding catch. But Mookie Betts, good jump, had to go to his right, reached across his body, made the catch, and slid on one knee on the artificial grass. Runners can't advance.
That saved two runs. That was a bullet.
Recapping the Red Sox loss against the Rays.
There's a shot toward left field, down the line. Brock Holt on the run is not going to get it. It gets by you. Two runs will score. Kiermaier on second, on his way to third for his second triple in as many days. It is 5-0 Tampa Bay.
Dial 617-779-7937. Now, Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Buck and Reamer doing Red Sox Review up till 7 o'clock, taking you to ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. An important game for the Red Sox, Buck. Orioles-Yanks.
Suddenly is a bigger game than we might have thought a couple of days
ago.
There
you go.
Huh?
It was.
Makes you do a little thinking, doesn't it?
It was. The one thing you did say last hour that I do agree with is it is better this way. Yes, we like a race to the end.
That's the one thing I said.
Yeah, the one thing you said I agree with. Yes, absolutely. Quickly, P-Day.
Rick Porcello, Cy Young Award candidate, says Alex Reamer. 617.
I'm retracting that. That's been retracted. And I said borderline, first of all, which if you take away these last three starts or so.
Let it go.
Number nine. Yeah, okay. I'll surrender that one. I'm not surrendering anything else. Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe spoke to Chris Sale after today's game, who said he's going to start a throwing program tomorrow. He'll play catch for the first time since he was shut down. Pete Abe then says he asked Sale, how does your shoulder feel? And Sale said, like Paul Bunyan's ox. So there you go.
That's a good thing, right?
I guess that's a good thing. Paul Bunyan's a big, strong guy. I'm assuming his ox was strong.
Was similarly strong.
Similarly strong, yeah. But, Chris Sale, that is, it's staying the obvious, but the news just gets worse and worse, I feel. I mean, I know he's starting a throwing program tomorrow, but hasn't played catch at all since he was shut down.
Slow down there, Mr. Sunshine.
Yeah.
You opened the whole show with all your proclamations about there's nothing to worry about.
Are we going
to
do this again? For the rest of the regular season, the Red Sox will squeak by and hold off the Yanks.
So
yes.
Sale doesn't pitch again.
And that, by the way, is real quick, that is just as much about the Yankees as it is about the Red Sox. I have no faith in the Yankees.
So Sale doesn't pitch again this year. Is that boost Porcello's Cy Young candidacy?
It takes a leader off the board. Of course it does. The other big news today, Buck, happened a few hours ago. Eric Decker announced his retirement on Instagram. And he said, it's time to hang up my helmet and start a new chapter in my life.
I can still walk.
I can still walk. Right. Decker's only 1 year younger than Julian Edelman, by the way.
Makes you wonder,
makes
huh?
you wonder.
Yeah.
It does. And this receiving core now. So Malcolm Mitchell gone, Jordan Matthews, Kenny Britt gone, Decker now retired. And by the way, Decker was not making this team. I mean, didn't get a snap with Brady the other night. Not a bad gig, though. He got $75,000 to, practice for 3 weeks. That's not bad.
He's in that Joey Galloway kind of
camp. Yeah, Torrey Holtz.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Who is the guy? J.J. Stokes back in the way. That might have been all the way to Bledsoe. It was a long time ago. But they, over the years, they brought in these veteran wideouts that just kind of stood around for a while.
Oh, there's a lot of them. Right.
Chris Gabriel, remember him?
No. I know Doug Gabriel. Yeah,
yeah.
Who was decent, though. He was stuck around in 06. Well, Chad
Chris Gabriel ran for governor or something.
Was he? I don't know. I don't know that one. But I do know, Buck, that right now your top three receivers for the Patriots, with Edelman out the first four, is Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett, and Cordarrelle Patterson. Wow. That makes Doug Gabriel, Rashea Caldwell look like murderer's row.
Yeah, and I go back. I've used this line a zillion times, and I apologize. But you go back to the year they lost the AFC title game to Peyton Manning at the RCA Dome in Indianapolis. And they went out. And there's no doubt in my mind, given the way things played out, that Brady walked into Bill's office and slammed his hand down on the table and said, get me some receivers. And Bill said, well, I'm on the phone with Adelius Thomas, and as soon as I get that deal wrapped up, I'll get you some receivers. Now, I'm creating a scenario here.
Right.
But what did indeed happen was they did go out and get Adelius Thomas, But the next three or four guys they signed were Dante Stallworth, Wes Welker.
Traded for Moss, right.
Randy Moss, and there was the tight end,
Kyle Brady. Who wound up not being a huge role, but he had a resume.
It illustrates where they were headed in terms of what they deemed necessary.
Right.
And I remember having arguments with Pete Shepard about this. Pete says, oh, receivers isn't why they lost the AFC title game. No, receivers is why they had to go to Indianapolis to play the damned AFC title game.
Right. And this is their worst receiving corps since 2013, where you had Edelman, obviously, but then after that, it was Aaron Dobson, Kenbrell Tompkins. You look at Brady's numbers that year, Buck. So go back to 2013, the last time Tom Brady had a receiving group like this. 11 picks, QBR of 87.3. They drafted Garoppolo the following year. So that was Tom Brady at 36 with a bad receiving group. Tom Brady at 41 has just as bad a receiving group. And I know you have Gronk, and you can throw to the running backs. James White, I think, was fourth on the team in receptions last year. So I get all that. It's not 1977. You throw to tight ends, you throw to the backs. Gronk's the best ever. But what you saw in the first half against Carolina, that might be what you see for the first month, because you're playing Houston, Jacksonville, the Lions with Matt Patricia. You're playing good defenses. Get ready for a slog, is what I would say.
I would agree with that. And the thing is, there have been so many times over the years that I said, this is the year the Patriots are going to suffer because they do not have blank. And more often than not, it's been pass defense.
Right.
And
which is a problem this year, too. Outside of Gilmore.
And there have been a lot of years where I've said opposing quarterbacks are going to drop back and feather balls into the into open receivers because they don't have guys that can cover these other receivers. And then they get to the middle of the season and they move the chess pieces around and all of a sudden they're shutting down opposing quarterbacks and they go to the AFC title game. So if history's been our guidepost, they'll figure it out because that's what they do. But going into this season, the Patriots are going to suffer because fill in the blank, this time the fill in the blank, the big one is receivers.
They could lose their first two, I think, easy. Deshaun Watson carved them up last year.
Their first two.
You think they will?
I think there's a good chance.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Deshaun Watson carved them up last year when he came into Gillette Stadium. I mean, that Texans defense is good. The Jaguars were a blown call away from winning the AFC title game. And Tom Brady at 41, I mean, how do you think he feels? So he's 41 years old, and as we mentioned, Edelman's gone the first four games, and now he's trying to connect with, you know, Philip Dorsett. People say, oh, Dorsett now is
just remember, he can't throw the ball and catch the ball at the same time.
A great woman once said that. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, people get all excited about his performance the other night. Five catches, but only one of them came from the arm of Tom Brady. I mean, the rest was with Brian Hoyer, and he's been a special teams guy his whole career. But the funny thing is, you look at the way this offseason transpired, right?
I forget you're doing morning drive now, so you're actually watching all these games.
I'm watching it all.
Yeah.
I'm plugged in. I'm ready to go. I always do my homework. I always do my homework.
You're doing your homework because you're on at 6:20 a.m. in the morning, and they'll say, what do you think of that play in the
second
quarter?
Right, we do lots of Patriots preseason talk on Kirk and Callahan, absolutely.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I did hear, I don't know if it was this game or the one before that, but there was a surprising amount of preseason football talk that morning.
It's because Jerry and Kirk were not there, probably.
Is that what it was?
That was Mike.
Okay.
See, when Mutt is hosting Kirk and Callahan, it's not Mutt, it's Mike. He turns into Mike Mutnansky. And Mike likes the preseason talk.
Oh, that's the guy that does the post-game Red
Sox
shows.
Mike, right.
Breaks down the game.
Well, I interviewed Schefter with Mutt a couple weeks ago, and the introduction, straight out of Radio Giant School, it's, hello, Adam, it's Mike and Alex in Boston. How are you?
Does he think that listeners distinguish that there's two different guys?
Right, and we're in Boston. Yeah. Adam Schefter needs to know that. We're in Boston. Hello, how are you? Hello, gentlemen. Great to be here with you. But, you know, funny thing is, as weird as this offseason was, very typical of Belichick to not overpay Amendola. You trade Brandon Cooks, and he gets like $50 million guaranteed from the Rams.
Amendola took some shots out the door.
Certainly did.
Yeah.
Well, that goes to show you where, you know, you talk about this locker room, if we have another 4th-and-2 type situation early in the year,
yep,
Belichick's, I don't think, going to get the benefit of the doubt from the bulk of that locker room.
No, I mean, he has not been getting the benefit of the doubt since the most recently played football game and big boy game, the Super Bowl. And I think the in Bill we trust crowd is taking a dent.
Right, and the thing is, too, there's Brady with Kirk and Callahan was asked a couple weeks ago, what's the state of relationship with Belichick? We're fine, we're on the same page, we have the same goal. Belichick, of course, has swept that under the rug, but it is impossible for me to believe that just because the calendar turns to September and we're ready for football, that all the animosity between Brady and Belichick over the last year plus suddenly disappears. That's not how things work.
No, and I think they have a sound business relationship when they're on the clock.
Oh, totally.
And that's all you can ask for.
Right. And I don't know if you've read the passages from a Mark Leibovich's new NFL book.
I read Tom Curran's.
Okay, piece. So I want to go to this. So this is Tom Brady in April of 2018, this past April, answering some questions from Leibovich via audio file. And So Brady said in April, so not too long ago, it's April and I don't intend to retire. And I certainly don't intend to get traded. He added that they can do whatever they want. It was pretty clear that things were not great between they and Brady right then. My sense is, informed by talking to some people close to him, that it wouldn't kill Brady if the Patriots were to release him into free agency, allowing him to control his next move, but that wasn't going to happen, so here we were, and the game continued. So this is Brady. This past April, Leibovich says a source close to Brady, I was on with Tomasi yesterday, he says that's Brady talking. So, source close to Brady.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, or Brady himself. In April, when Garoppolo's gone, nobody's behind you, you've won that war, and it wouldn't have killed him if the Patriots released him? Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
I can tell you.
It's a bombshell.
I have known Mark Leibovich for 25 years.
Yes.
Since he worked for the Boston Phoenix. And we used to hang out in Harvard Square. I've known him for a long time. I know what his reporting skills are. And Curran makes this point in that piece, in that Leibovich's style is to embed himself.
It's great.
And to hang out.
The little details he gives you tell you so much about his subjects.
And given that history, and I didn't hear you with John, but my first thought was sometimes when you read a source, the source is really high. It could be the President of the United States talking to a trusted White House reporter, but don't quote me on it, that kind of thing. So you say a White House source. So it's entirely possible that source was Brady, and it does make you wonder. And by the way, I have never ruled out a scenario by which Brady closes out his career with another team, simply because he didn't go to Newton North High School. He wasn't a Larry Bird fan as a little kid. I mean, he's not local. And
well, Tom Brady Sr. himself said years ago to Leibovich that it will end poorly for Brady.
Yeah, but it's poorly for everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, you know. And so if he were, and I mean, I always do this. Johnny Unitas, Joe Namath, Joe Montana, Bobby Orr, O.J. Simpson. All these iconic players from the era end up playing for different teams. Babe Ruth with the freaking Boston Braves. Who would have thought Joe Namath, O.J.? I mean, Johnny Unitas playing for San Diego. I mean, these are things you couldn't possibly fathom, yet they happen. So why not? I mean, there are exceptions. I mean, Derek Jeter was never going to play for anybody else, so I understand that. But Derek Jeter had the rock-solid support of ownership right up to the last day.
And when he sucked every day at shortstop, they still ran him out there,
did.
Hit him at the top of the order.
And he did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I mentioned this Brady thing, too, because last night you had Jacoby Brissett and Garoppolo playing each other. They wrote messages. Very cute. Yeah, they met the wolf pack. It just shows you again, though, the whole strangeness of this situation. So Brissett gets traded last September for Philip Dorsett. Then Garoppolo, we know, gets traded in October. And you're at a situation with Brady now where you're going year to year with him. They can't even touch his contract until next August. So when training camp opens in July of 2019, Tom Brady will be going into his contract year, and the Patriots can't even begin touching that thing. So it is bizarre. And I don't think, and we do Brady Belichick as much as anything, but I don't think that component has gotten enough play. That when Garoppolo was traded and you throw into the Brissett deal too, there's nobody behind Brady. You'd think at least three more years, right? And now we are going year to year with Tom. In this latest new contract he has with the incentives, they did not add another year to it. Leibovich is saying as recently as April, Brady, or source close to Brady, it wouldn't kill him if the Patriots were to release him into free agency. Man, oh man, we have Guerrero on the team playing still. I mean, this stuff is not going away, folks. It's just not.
Josh McDaniels coming back from Indianapolis.
Right.
Parachuted out of the plane somewhere over Buffalo, hitchhiked his way back to Foxborough.
What'd you make of the Guerrero thing on the team plane? Is that a big deal? Is that a sign that Brady has another check in Brady's favor in the war against Belichick?
I look at it as a negotiation. I think that when they sat down, and again, there's a lot of stuff happens behind the scenes. We don't know how involved Guerrero is in places that we can't see. But yeah, the fact that he's on the plane, if that makes Tom Brady happy, and this goes back to what we were talking about before, David Price and quality of life. If Tom Brady's quality of life is enhanced, even if it's placebo effect, by having this guy on the plane and they can play checkers in the hotel lobby, whatever they do, the deep tissue massage on the Facebook thing that we all watched. If that's what floats his boat, then go ahead. Give the baby his rattle. But you can't walk in the sideline.
Right. Still was not on the sideline. But I would say there had to be more than just Guerrero can fly on the same airplane as Tom Brady. I mean, what is Guerrero going to do for Brady on the airplane? Give him a nice shoulder rub?
It means that he doesn't have to fly commercially and stand at the carousel and pick up
It was an ostracization thing, too. Like, Guerrero was being ostracized. Like, you're so poisonous, you're not even allowed to fly on the same sheet of metal as everybody else. I mean, that's what that was about,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but see, in all seriousness, the team flight is a sort of a sacred place. And who gets to fly? Like, for instance, when I was a beat writer back in the day, all the beat writers would fly with the team. There was a negotiation over a period of years, and the players ask for this, ownership offers that. At some point in the last 15 or 20 years, the players said, hey, we don't want the media on the plane anymore. So now it's just rights holders. So you get like the WEI guys and the Nesson guys and so forth. But it used to be we'd fly with the team.
Bradfoe's flying on the team plane? I didn't know that. We have our own .com jet at WEI. So the Nesson people are doing that.
Little prop plane.
Yeah.
Guy with a scarf around his neck, yeah, and everything.
And by the way, I mean, you know, to go back to it, I think Belichick's viewpoint on Guerrero, totally legitimate. I mean, this guy investigated by the FTC twice.
Oh, couldn't
Massachusetts investigated him for practicing physical therapy without a license.
The magic cancer water and
right,
all that stuff. Yeah.
But you also remember, too, I went back and read the original Globe story about his banishment. Guerrero was never banned from the locker room. He was just banned from treating players besides Brady in his Gillette Stadium office. So I think that got misconstrued as well. So there you have it. Patriots are on the table as well, in addition to the Red Sox. Let's grab Dan in Cranston, who wants to talk Chris Sale. Dan, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What up?
Hey, Dan.
Two quick points on Sale. One, if this was a normal year when there's a pennant race, we'd be talking a lot more about Sale, you know what I mean, and how he's doing what Sale does. He's always getting injured later in the year. And there's one other point that no one's talking about. And is he up after next year with his contract?
Yep.
Yes.
What do you think he's going to get? Like six at 35?
That's 6 years about right? At $35 million a year.
He'll get north of 200, assuming he stays healthy.
Yeah, well, it'll be a 217 type deal that David Price got.
Well, here's my point. I mean, this guy has a very long track record now of not being able to last the whole season. Would you be willing to shell out that kind of money to them?
No, the Red Sox should not re-sign Chris Sale in 2019.
I'd let him walk. He's got the body. He's like Pedro. He's not going to last too long once he gets into his 30s. I would totally let him walk. But
there's only one guy, and not to say I told you so, John Lester never should have been allowed to leave here. He wanted to stay here. He made it known that he would give the team a hometown discount to stay here. So what the Red Sox did, and this is, I think, on Larry, is that they lowballed him to the degree that he couldn't possibly take what they offered him. And then when they fell out of the race in 14, they turned around and traded him, which was a horrible, horrible decision, because John Lester has proved again to be a great postseason pitcher. I know it's a small sample size, Alex.
It is, but he's been great in that small sample size.
And that was a huge mistake they made. He should have played his entire career here or close to it, and gone to the Hall of Fame as a Red Sox lefty.
And it just goes to show you, too, Dan, the caller mentioned Chris Sale. He's up next year. It goes to show you that this is the peak of this current Red Sox team that Dombrowski has mortgaged the farm system for, because Kimbrel is up this offseason, okay? Then next year, Chris Sale is up. Then 2020, you have what? Bogarts is up. Porcello is up. 2021, Mookie Betts, of course, is up. This is the best this roster is going to be, you would say, for the next 3 or 4 years.
Considering they don't have another Mookie Betts in the on-deck circle down in Pawtucket, yes, or soon to be Worcester. But, I agree with that. Because Sale is, club option next year?
He has one last option.
And, how he does in the postseason this year may determine, and obviously next year. But, that's a question mark right now.
What, Chris Sale?
Yeah.
Oh, huge.
I don't think it's a slam dunk that they let him go.
It would be so stupid to re-sign him. So stupid. It never works out. When does it ever work out? Sign a guy 30.
John Lester has worked out with the Cubs.
Although, interestingly enough, we did this the other day. David Price has a better ERA with the Red Sox than Lester has had over the last 3 years with the Cubs.
Yeah, Cubs and Lester won a World Series with the Cubs. Price hasn't.
Telling you.
You know,
too hard on my man, Davey.
Oh, it's Davey now.
Yeah, we're close. We call him Davey now. Jay in the car. What's up, Jay?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey.
2 points. One, I want to talk about the Red Sox current slump, and I also, you guys brought up right before the last break, Jackie Bradley Jr. I've been a Red Sox fan way too long to not think that this is going to still come down to the last series against the Yankees this season. I mean, even when they were up by 11, I didn't feel comfortable. I feel like this offense, yes, they were the top offense in baseball, but I feel like they really only have three or four hitters, and guys are playing above where they're supposed to.
I'm sorry, Jay. What's your point with the lineup?
I feel like that lineup, I mean, they don't have a solid, I mean, yes, of course, you know, 1-2 in terms of Mookie and JD, they're going to be, you know, 1-2-3 in the MVP race. But then besides Bogey, I feel like they don't have any really good hitters.
Benintendi?
I
mean, come on.
He's okay.
Mitch Moreland? Steve Pearce? Blake Swihart's been swinging the lumber recently?
Yeah, but they're playing above where their career averages are, and they're not. They're going to come back to earth, which is what I think the Red Sox are doing a little bit right now, coming back to earth. And on the Jackie Bradley point, I don't know if you agree with this, Buck, or not. I mean, I grew up in the era of Fred Lynn. This guy is insane in the outfield. I mean, my daughter.
He is the best defensive center fielder I have seen.
And I
saw Pearsall and Tris Speaker. I've seen all the best. And he's the best I've seen.
I've ever seen Jackie. My daughter and I just got back from Tampa this morning. We went and watched, you know, two of the games down there. The best catch I ever saw Jackie make is the one he didn't make on Friday night that he flew in the air and almost caught.
That's a fair point. He never gave up on the ball. He timed it perfectly. He just didn't have enough oomph time to get there. And the best catch he's made this year is that one where he slammed in, where he dove and he picked the ball up low to the ground and then sort of hit his back against the wall in left center.
Incredible. I forgot about Jackie, too. He's up in 2020, I think, or 2021, one of the two. And by the way, since July 1, I have it here, Bradley, 807 OPS. I mean, that is a hell of a ball player, Buck, when he's swinging the bat
like
that.
There were a lot of people eating crow last night. Trade him, get rid of him, send him down, bench him. No, leave him in center field. He's going to be fine.
And that goes to show you again, just that this lineup is still so much deeper than last year. And yes, JD Martinez obviously is the biggest X factor there. But with the way Bradley's been hitting and you have Swihart now off the bench, that's why ultimately with this bad starting pitching, I get that. But this lineup is still good enough to carry them through the rest of the regular season.
By the way, Swihart can catch.
He can.
He was like the forgotten guy in the bench there for the longest time. Now, I mean, I'm not suggesting he's Johnny Bench or anything, but he looks fine behind
the Red Sox were forced into playing him. And yeah. Look what happens. 617-779-7937. Buck and Reamer will be right back.
Know that the impact that the events of the last 3 weeks have had on this institution, an institution that I love, and how challenging this has been for our community, our president, a man who I have great respect for, and for that I am deeply sorry. I'm fully aware that I'm ultimately responsible for the situation that has harmed the university as a whole and our Department of Athletics and our football program. I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation. I followed my heart, not my head. I fell short in pursuing full information because at each juncture, I gave Zach Smith the benefit of the doubt.
So that was the original apology that Urban Meyer had.
But wait, there's more.
There's more, yes. He had to apologize for the apology, which is never good. As Kirk Minahan can tell you, when you have to apologize for your apology, that's never a good thing. So Urban Meyer.
I heard the Aaron Andrews thing, is what you're talking about?
Yes.
I was in a hotel room in Minneapolis because that all happened at the All-Star game. And I heard the apology and I'm like, oh boy.
So Urban Meyer, yeah, had to apologize for the apology. Apologize to Buckeye Nation, which is great. It always makes it seem sincere when you're throwing in a marketing slogan like that.
Yeah.
I apologize to Buckeye Nation, Sooner Nation, Roll Tide.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation.
It's like, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's a t-shirt.
Yeah, and then my favorite part is it was not in the cut, but he was asked, you know, what I have to say to Courtney Smith, the wife of Zach Smith, who suffered this abuse, and Urban Meyer said, I'm sorry that we're all in this situation. Like, yeah, no. Right. It's been really hard on you, right, Urban? So Urban Meyer did a redo. This was released late Friday night. My words and demeanor on Wednesday did not show how seriously I take relationship violence. I sincerely apologize. I was taught at a very young age that if I ever hit a woman, I would be kicked out of the house and never welcomed back. I have the same rule in my house and in the football program at Ohio State. Over the years, we have worked hard to educate and remind our coaches and players of the seriousness of relationship violence. That's another thing, too, that I call BS on. My father has never had to tell me, don't hit a woman. It just kind of goes unspoken.
You weren't taught at your house?
No, it just unspoken. Don't hit your spouse. Don't hit your partners. Another paragraph, I understand my lack of more action in this situation has raised concerns about this commitment. I once again apologize for this. I extend my empathy to all women, men, and families who are affected by relationship violence. Then finally, in the third paragraph, he gets to the victim, Courtney Smith. Let me say here and now, and I should have said on Wednesday, I sincerely apologize to Courtney Smith and her children for what they have gone through. I was saying this yesterday with Tomasi. Curious to get your take. All of these professional sports leagues are slimy to an extent. I mean, we know about the NFL. I mean, you can go on down the line and big time college sports, but college football is the worst of the worst. It's worse than anything else out there in terms of this kind of stuff. Covering up, you know, look at the player in Maryland who died earlier this summer. I mean, literally was run to death by their head coach, DJ Durkin. College football is worse. It's the worst of the worst.
What makes it even worse than all what you just said is players don't get paid.
Right.
And they are run through a football mill, and then one out of 100 will go to the NFL or the NBA or the, you know, whatever, and make lots of money. And the real thing we don't talk about, and I never in a million years thought I'd be saying this, that you should be paying these guys. If you were paying college athletes, there would be less rule breaking, more accountability, and everybody would live happily ever after. It's not. It sounds weird to pay kids to go to college, but it's a way to get the sleazy benefactors and guys with big hats and cars out of the way.
They're getting the free education. That's their payment.
Yeah, and turn this into something real. And you touched on this a couple of minutes ago, but what really made the hair stand up in the back of my neck during the Urban Meyer thing, I don't know why it is, but when he said the words Buckeye Nation, I was like, what?
How fake.
Buckeye Nation? Yeah. Like,
straight, I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation.
Straight from the PR offices.
If you're a member of Buckeye Nation and you heard that, your only recourse is to go, hell yeah! If you're a serious Ohio State fan and you're listening to that, you're a hardcore fan, and you're looking for something, and I don't know where you come down this, but Belichick, because I was at the press conference a few years back, I thought that Belichick responding to the Aaron Hernandez situation was as heartfelt and genuine as a coach can get.
And he didn't talk about Patriots Nation.
And there was no
Patriots.
Yeah, there was no Patriot Nation. There was none of that. And I know this puts us behind for the Super Bowl, but we're going to bounce back. We've got, you know, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but he, Odin Lloyd, he mentioned him by name, and so there was victimization here. There was that's not the right word, but there was paying homage to the victim and sorrow to the victim and so forth. That was part of Belichick's presentation. There was none of that in this. But when you hear Buckeye Nation, if you're a hardcore Ohio State fan and you're listening, and whatever you might have been expecting, he's going to apologize and this is serious stuff. Buckeye Nation. Yeah, Buckeye Nation.
Yeah, go get him.
I want to apologize to Buckeye Nation.
And I don't take moral stands. I mean, I don't watch college football because I spend all Sunday on the couch watching professional football, so I don't really want to spend all Saturday on the couch too. By the way, I play on football on Saturdays. I'm a terrific
flag football player.
Like,
I've heard
flag
about your
football.
Skills.
It's not touch, it's flag football.
Flag football.
Yes. But it's just
you get to rip off other players' clothing, basically.
No. You rip off their flags. Their shorts may fall down as well, but that's fine. No, you rip off their flags.
I got down there a couple years ago. I didn't make it last year, but it's fun.
I am a star corner now.
You're a starting cornerback.
Starting corner.
Now, whose team? Are you on Johnny Richardson's team?
No, I was last year.
Okay.
I'm on my good friend's team. He picks me every time.
Your good friend's team?
Yeah. Well, my good friend's team. How do you? My good friend's team.
My good friend's team.
Viola. Okay. There you have it. I've turned to a big corner. Originally, I was a pass rusher, right? I'm like me, Michael Strahan, Richard Seymour.
I think of Strahan.
Yeah, the great defensive ends of our time, the great pass rushers. That was me. I've switched to corner now. I've switched to that skill position. So it's just in three games, and he'll come back, and no Ohio State fans will abandon their team over this. No. And it's just, and the thing is, too, I had this debate with Jerry and Kirk a few weeks ago. Urban Meyer is a public employee. I mean, the taxpayers are paying this guy money to cover up domestic violence. That adds an especially evil twist to it all as well.
Phrase the way you phrased it. There is nothing inaccurate with what you said.
Thank you. Phrase the way I phrased it. See, I'm getting good at this.
Yes.
I'm getting good at this. Let's grab Don and Lowell wants to bring things back to the Sox because this is Red Sox Review Buck here till 7. Don, what's going on?
Hi, Don.
How you doing?
What's up?
What's going on, Don?
Well, I think Cora's doing well, except for why do you put two good guys out today to rest when they could have picked Martinez should have been in there. Well, he could have rested if They don't miss two of your top players at the same time. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's a getaway day. Yeah, rested Martinez and Benintendi today. I mean,
Corey's made it very clear.
He's been
clear,
doing that all year.
Yeah, that he is going to adhere.
Either Benintendi or Ramirez they could have used either one of them.
Yeah, I understand that, Don. The problem is when you rest guys and then your team loses, the Dons from Lowell of the world are going to call in and complain about it. And your complaint is valid because you wanted to see these guys in the game. But
you're one of them.
But you know, I think that you're thinking in a vacuum, today's game, what it means.
I'm thinking about the team, and why these are two of the better players. So why was two of your
because they have 90 wins on August 26th.
I'm sorry, who didn't play today?
Martinez didn't play, and Benintendi was out.
Okay, well, Benintendi you got just about the toughest lefty in baseball, so maybe sit him today. So right. I don't really have an issue there. And JD, I don't know, did he have a toe? How many games?
Maybe just
in a
2 days off. Yeah, off tomorrow.
Yeah, so give a guy two. I don't really have. I'm not quibbling over how Cora gives days off. I think that's a reach in my book.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. What is interesting though is to go back to Chris Sale. So out of spring training, we heard a lot of talk about we're going to manage Sale so he doesn't break down at the end of the year. If you looked at his innings and pitches thrown in comparison to last year and this year before the DL stint, virtually identical. So they did not use Chris Sale differently. They used him just as much this year.
No, it's fewer pitches thrown.
Fewer pitches thrown, but the innings were roughly the same.
No, but they've been measuring pitches thrown, and as of 2 weeks ago, he had thrown 180 fewer pitches over the same number of starts, which is if you divide by two, 90 pitches, that's two starts.
Right.
So I disagree with you. They are doing a better job of they're being a lot more specific about usage. And by the way, to dovetail off what Don from Lowell said, I'll tell you, my biggest criticism of Cora this season, number one, he refuses to bring the hammer down on Bogaerts for the hit first.
I know you're big
bases.
On this.
Oh, it's an obsession.
Tweet about it constantly.
Yeah, because
is it faster or slower to first base if you dive head first?
But you know the answer to that. You're just trying to tweak me here.
I am.
You know the answer to that question. That it's faster if you run through the base. It's also a hell of a lot more dangerous to body parts sliding head first into a piece of cement.
When you're running the 40, you know, the 40 yard dash and track, do you slide into the finish line or do you run through it? You run through it.
And then there was a case a few weeks back where Devers made a horrible base running decision. He was basically trotting in a third base, thinking there were, and I forget the specifics, but I riddled against it on Twitter, and he should not have been in the lineup the next day. You should sit him. You're not going to play tomorrow. And there are certain things with younger players on base running and stuff like that drives me crazy. Resting two guys today.
Not a big deal. No, you talk about someone who hasn't faced adversity. Cora has gotten such a cakewalk here so far this season, which granted, that's what happens. You have 90 wins in late August. What have you been hammering him about?
Bogaerts and Devers. Those are two that I annihilated.
It will be interesting this postseason. Those tight, talk about how it's untested. We haven't seen Cora in those spots yet. This is when no one's throwing well out of the bullpen. Here's another great, another baseball education for you, Buck. A bad bullpen can make any manager look bad.
Write
that down.
This is Tuesday's column.
Yes, write that down during the break. Buck and Reamer will be right back. So you've been writing down my notes, Buck. So you're very busy
that
during
thing
the
about
break.
The bullpen
yeah,
is,
I mean the baseball, the baseball education that's been coming from this seat the last
I'm
couple
a better
hours.
Baseball
man, oh, man.
Writer than I was at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, exactly. Thank
and
you.
And I thank you for that.
You're welcome. Anytime.
And I'm going to cast my Cy Young vote for it. Rick Porcello.
Nice borderline. Now it's as of early August.
So with what little time we have left, and we get Paul and Westfield and others waiting. Are we going to get to Paul?
No.
You kind of waved your hand.
We're not. Paul.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to, I listened to a good chunk of the WEI Nesson Radio Telethon this past week, and I wanted to applaud everybody from this station and from Nesson for the work they did. Now, that is sort of an easy thing to say, but what really caught me this year was, and it really made me do a lot of thinking, was that Todd Schwartz got his props this year. He returned to prominence. Chad Jennings in The Athletic wrote a terrific oral history.
Were you a part of that?
And I was.
Yes.
And Todd was a UMass student who was on the original WEI Radiothon in 2002, and he sat there with me and Glenn and the late Dick Raddatz, And he summoned lots of energy and strength that day to inspire lots of people to call in and donate to the Jimmy Fund. And Todd died in November of that year. He was 19. Wow. And a lot of us were devastated by Todd's death because we didn't know he was as sick as he was. And this year, his name got brought up a lot. He's a real hero of all this, not just because he was on the radio that day, but also because he was the one who went to Lisa Sherbert and said, what about trips and so forth for older kids? We're not children. We're 18, 19, 20 years old. And it didn't happen in his lifetime. But those trips that you read about where they take older kids down to spring training and on Sox road trips to Camden Yards and so forth, Todd Schwartz was the inspiration for that. And his name lives on. And I was really pleased to hear a lot of that this past week.
Yeah, it was incredible. Another record-setting week for the Jimmy Fund Telethon. Over $50 million raised since this whole thing was kicked off 17 years ago. Just incredible. I, for Boston Community Affairs, which airs Saturday mornings here, I spoke with Lisa Sherber a couple weeks ago. And yeah, the whole trips thing, the whole thing of, you know, they're not patients, treating them as kids. And they have those experiences. There's a young girl named Carly Gonzalez who was interviewed on the station this week, and she said that exact point. You're diagnosed with cancer, and you just consider, like, oh, my life is over. I'm not a kid anymore. But to go on those trips and to have bonds and relationships with others who are going through the same thing you are, it is incredible. And it's also very special work. A
shout out to the host, because I used to sit in with Glenn for that, and to hear Glenn and Jerry and all these people, you've got all this stimulus coming in from every direction. You got people handing you pieces of paper. You got doctors and children and parents coming in and celebrities on line one. And there are so many movable parts. And to make it, I hate to use the word entertaining, but to make it informational and entertaining at the same time is a very difficult trick. Yes. And those guys do a great job.
Absolutely. All right, Mr. Buckley, Two Outs podcast coming up this week, folks.
Yes.
Stay tuned for that. We're back and we're better than ever. Saturday Night Baseball coming up next. Kirk and Callahan. Tomorrow morning at 6, Tom Brady joins the boys around 7 o'clock. You certainly won't want to miss that. Chris Scheim, as always, great job behind the glass. See ya.
Toward the middle, but the second baseman on the left side as it throws low. Scooped by Bowers. Ball game is over, and the Red Sox are swept by the Tampa Bay Rays.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.